Welcome to London Welsh Rugby Club Podcast, special episode one. Our traditional podcast series is going from strength to strength, and our guests on those episodes are all related to the club in some form or other. Past and present, players, coaches, club officials or volunteers have all contributed to this excellent series where you can hear from all the great characters associated with the club. With these special episodes, we are bringing the great and good of the rugby world to London Welsh to ask them about the current issues that affect the game of rugby or events that we can celebrate together. If there are personalities from the game you would like us to chat to, please feel free to get in touch and let us know. This week, we start with a World Cup winner who loves being part of the community game, but still analyses rugby at the top end for his role as Sky Sports and the Daily Telegraph. Our guest in this special is Will Greenwood. Enjoy. Welcome to the pod for the first of one of our special episodes, World Cup winner, British and Irish Lion, former Leicester and Quinn Centre, current Maidenhead coach, Will Greenwood, MBE. How are you, Will?
I'm great. And to my Welsh friends, my mum and dad live in Rose-on-Sea. We call it Costa del Rose. And you talk about community rugby. My dad is still heavily involved at Rhyl Rugby Club. So to my Welsh friends, who I occasionally scored tries against, apologies for that, but I'm with you now.
That's great, because I'm from North Wales and have relatives used to stay in Rose-on-Sea. Elderly, it's a good place for the elderly to live by the sea, isn't it? So that's great. Look, you look well. How's lockdown been for the Greenwoods then?
Like everyone, committed acceptance. There's been, I think, great philosophers have once said, it's not naughty, naughty, very naughty. That's a song, isn't it? Great philosopher once said, name that song. But I think it's okay to rain. It's when a sort of heavy weather depression sets in. So it's rained on the Greenwood household like it's rained on most households, but we've been able to turn it around into sunshine relatively quick on most occasions. And we now see some genuine sunshine and some hope that the pathway to freedom is on the horizon.
No, it definitely is. It's always best to focus on what we can do, not what we can't do. And I take it you're certainly a positive chap. I know you're massively into your rowing and you've been keeping fit, doing some rowing challenges and challenging people with your times and things like that, haven't you?
Yeah, oh, look, I'm a huge believer in physical fitness being a great stimulant for the brain, to clear the mind, to allow you to switch off from whatever troubles you may have. That doesn't mean you have to train like Jess Ennis-Hill or Mo Farah. You have to find your own cadence, your own little goals, your own little targets, ideally surrounded with some friends. And I've definitely lent on my friends. There's sort of investments and withdrawals I think you can make on your great, on your true friends, and which allows you to occasionally lean on them. And at other times, allow them to lean on you. And in times like these, like a good team, you pick each other up, you check in with each other, you see how you're doing. And sometimes you're the one bringing the energy, and other times you're the one feeding off their energy. And as long as there's a nice balance to that, I think you can achieve anything. And I've certainly I've aligned with my old university team from 1991 to 2 Durham, and we row and cycle together virtually 2 or 3 times a week, and it's in the diary and we look forward to it and we catch up on family and what's going on, and then we sweat a bit and then we say have a great day at work and see you in 48 hours. And so that's been a real energy boost for me at times, and I've trained way harder and done much more than I would have done if I just thought about doing this on my own. I think it's one of the great lessons of lockdown that none of us is as good as all of us.
The benefit of a team, eh? And speaking of which, look, we're speaking to you today, really, because this week is the return of community rugby after three and a half, four months out. And it's really exciting, especially for the children, the boys and girls. You volunteer at Maidenhead. Have you already been out playing rugby this week or coaching rugby? Because I know your boys played, don't they?
Yeah, I scored four on Tuesday night. Scored four in senior training. Yeah, I ran around with the senior team at Maidenhead. So we had the under-12s were on at six. So my lad was on at six. And the other end of the pitch were the under-14s. Then at 7:15, because there was a little leeway for COVID for people to get in and get out of the outside entrance. It's gated. It's a 4G pitch at Maidenhead. So it's inside a sort of cage. So you have to leave enough gaps in between to make sure there aren't too many crowds gathering, but we're very COVID friendly. I'm about to fill in my COVID app for training tonight. My 11-year-old will be on the park at 6. I will take him down. His mum will pick him up at 7:15. I'll then join the seniors. We'll run around for approximately 75 minutes, and it's great to have that back and part of my routine. It's been part of my existence since Dad took me to Preston Grasshoppers as a 12-year-old, and the days when a 12-year-old could train with the senior team, you learn how to look after yourself. Being a little 12-year-old, you're running around on a pitch with Wade Dooley. You don't want to run into him, even if he's trying not to hurt you. So that's a blast from the past for some. Well, certainly Welsh people remember Wade from the scrap, the Cardiff Arms scrap of what year would it have been? Where did England play? Wales this year at Cardiff, so yeah. It's an odd year. It must have been 1989, the big scrap. Might have been 89 or 91. It was in Cardiff.
Yeah, the lineouts was there, something. Yeah.
That's it. Big Wade. So I was dodging Wade as an 11-year-old all those years ago. So, look, the kids are up and about. Sunday is the first morning back, and we'll all be back. We've got a great little club. I think all... It can be ballet, it can be boxing, it can be music. I think parents should offer very different and varied opportunities to their kids to get involved with and allow them to choose what they'd like and keep sticking these opportunities in front of them. So, look, the local rugby club for me is a haven, a safe haven. The missus knows I've got a smile on my face when I jump into the car to go training.
Yeah, no, we've got O2 Touch at London Welsh. So we had on Monday night about 50 people playing, all COVID friendly, all this sort of thing, as you'd imagine. But you know, again, all ages, all abilities, both genders, and it's just a joy. And then last night we had some youth training. But yeah, as you say, at Maidenhead on Sunday, likewise at London Welsh this Sunday, the minis and youth are back, and we'll probably have 300 or 400 kids across 4 hours outside running around, seeing their friends and playing this great sport. But look, you know, there's a lot in the press around the importance of exercise and how this generation may be the least fit. A lot of children might not have done much exercise in those 3 months. What do you see are the benefits and values of rugby for children?
So look, there's a place on a rugby field for every shape, size, speed, strength. You know, you think about all the... You know, an X and Y axis, and you can literally have any combination of body shape, and there's a place on a rugby field. I think I've always thought of rugby as a potentially rather violent game of chess. So it also creates opportunities for where we always often think that the strong will take from the weak on a game of rugby. Actually, you can also combine that the smart will take from the strong. So it allows for a huge amount of cognitive difference out on a rugby field and challenging thought processes about how to break down different defences, how to create defensive strategies that can nullify outstanding attacking sides. So there's a huge amount of top 2 inches required. The non-negotiable on rugby is you've got to try and be the best at things that require no skill. So you've got to work hard. If you can work hard on a Tuesday night when it's pouring down the rain in January on London Welsh pitch when the back floodlights have failed and it's miserable and horrible, then I'm telling you, any work crisis is a walk in the park compared to that. It's such a wonderfully inclusive sport, physically, mentally, collectively, that if you haven't tried it, you really, really should, because you don't know what you're missing out on.
Exactly. But
the problem is, of course, the people who are listening to this have already tried it. So I'm like teaching everyone it's okay because I'm already in the right cathedral.
You certainly are, and obviously with all your followers, you know, will be here listening to this as well. But look, there's a lot of concerns about the long-term future of the sport with all the publicity around players' health due to head knocks, etc. What can rugby do to ensure that it's as safe as possible for children and senior players alike?
Yeah, look, I think it's a great question. I think at the junior level, it's really important. And most junior clubs are completely aligned on this. First of all, everything's about player safety. So if in doubt, remove from field and play. Let me literally, if in any shadow of doubt, remove from field and play. I think alongside that, the technical coaching is really important. If you can pick up the basics, the real technical basics, and all the kids that are listening will understand about Tower of Power and Ring of Steel and Cheek to Cheek. And they're all phrases, but they're very relevant phrases to create safety in the tackle, to really monitor and officiate well so that kids are in, all junior refs, I believe, should just embrace their inner Nigel Owens to make sure the communication levels are super high so that kids are in no doubt about what's going on at the breakdowns and how many people are allowed in. With that, there's tempo, there's speed, it creates a much safer place. There's a huge onus on the coaches at junior level in order to get them, these children, to a position, I think, at 17 and 18, that as you then progress into senior rugby, they are equipped physically and technically to play, but also cognizant of the potential risks as a senior player, because the reality is it's a contact sport, rugby, and at senior level, we cannot remove injuries. We want to try and limit the number of injuries, and those could be dislocations and ACL and unfortunately concussions. But we want to give kids the opportunity to get to a stage of their adult life that they can weigh up the pros and cons and go, I'm in a pretty good shape. I understand the full risks of playing a contact sport. I'm technically aware and able to compete and look after myself. Sign me up, because I bloody love this sport.
Look, do you think the media, you work in the media at Sky, like, so do you think the media have a role to play here? Because they constantly talk about the size and weight of players and emphasise hits and collision. But really, rugby's meant to be about, you know, avoiding, so, you know, finding the gaps. So why run into the tree trunk when you can find the branch, you know?
Yeah, look, I agree with that. So vocabulary is really important. And I think more importantly, actually, on the commentary side of things, and I think all the channels do it really well, is explaining what's going on with the current officiating, understanding that, we might look at it and go, that would never be a yellow in our day. But that's our days. Like, it's like living and without the internet. It's like, forget about it. That day is gone. It just doesn't exist anymore. So I think they're doing it really well, that in the context of a safer game, we must absolutely change the behaviours and patterns of players who have grown up bridging the generations, and the new generation just grow up only knowing the new way and the, no doubt, modified and iterated new way as we learn more and more. So I think the one thing, though, that would potentially not go against what you're saying. Look, I'm a player who always wanted to go round things rather than through things. The reality is, though, rugby is a north-south game. We'd all like to go east-west, get around the outside and score in the corner.
Yeah.
But if you don't at some stage go forward, if you don't at some stage win game lines, you become very easy to defend against, and you end up chasing your own shadow underneath your own post, throwing speculative, long, loopy missed passes and wondering what's gone wrong. And that's why it goes back to horses for courses, getting those that are good at winning contacts, and those that are looking for space, finding space, and those two very different skill sets combining to find the best way to beat a team. Whilst I agree the beautiful game is tiki-taka and ball movement and spatial awareness and hunting space. That cannot exist without, at some stage, someone doing some grunt work.
No, that's fair. Look, you were speaking about the community game, and you coach at Maidenhead. You're the backs coach across the senior squad. Is that what you do?
I'm jack of all trades.
Okay.
chief fundraiser, chief rattler, chief speech organizer, chief celebrity coach, chief sponsorship manager. Look, okay. You know what? What do we need? What are we doing? What do we need? I know a bloke. I know a woman who can help us. Right, that's it. So that's basically what I do. And then I run around with the lads on a technical capacity. I'm not the chief strategist in any way, shape, or form. I'm enthusiastic. I'm like Donkey from Shrek. I bring the energy. I support. I do a lot of micro coaching. Do a lot of one-on-ones. So that's not micromanagement, that's coach whispering. Do a lot of in and amongst big sessions. Just on the very first session, I can count probably six or seven. Teo, just come over here. What are we thinking we're doing here about this? You know, everyone's running that play off a breakdown now where there'll be a couple of forwards and a back sat in behind, and you'll either carry hard, tip onto the other forward, or pull it back to the fly half in behind. Teo was struggling to understand. The ball was going on the deck too much. So which shoulder are you attacking? Where are your hands? What are you looking at? What are the signals? What actually is your role here? Okay, so let's take a little bit of heat out of your feet and let's bring a little bit of composure. You're in this role, you're ideally a conduit, but trust your dynamism that if the gap opens up, you can go. But if you come at this too aggressively, too hard, too quickly, then the people outside you will lose. You're the main tent peg. They'll get lost. Things break down. So those are the sorts of, that's the sort of coaching I really enjoy doing, working with individuals in the pursuit of better.
How did you get involved with Maidenhead? You live locally, and then because of that, you got involved in your local club and your children go there and just that sucks you in. So what do you personally get out of that involvement then?
It's training tonight, man. Like, can't wait. Literally can't remember, bags packed. Have I got everything's ready? You know, I've got some work to do before then, but apparently, have I? Okay, you know, it's training now. So what do I get out of it? I drive into the car park, and whatever, you know, we've got builders in at the house at the moment, and it's like, you know, classic builders. We've all got our crosses to bear at home. There's all, you know, all families have tougher times on occasion. But I drive in the rugby club and I know from 6 o'clock till 9 o'clock tonight, and I say this hopefully, and it's taken the context, the world could be on fire and I would just have a smile on my face and I'd go back to the fire at 9 o'clock. It's an amazing ability just to park everything. It's like you hand everything in at the gate, all stresses and strains and physical ailments. Your sore leg disappears the second you're having a game of touch. The slightly tight back as you're scampering in for another one down the wing, gone. I mean, unfortunately, you know, at 9 o'clock it all reappears and you go, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done that. But then you have a beer when you get home and that goes again. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy of joy.
No, it's good to hear. Look, Maidenhead, their season finished like everyone else in the country back in March 2020. You were second in the league, and then in the final standings, you were third, right? So does that mean you stay in the Southwest Premier, which is level five for the next season?
Yeah, and I think but they've changed it up now. So we've actually shifted. So you're right, we had a right old chance. The reality is, I'm hoping none of the Maidenhead lads listen to this. We've still got a bit of a soft underbelly. We're not tough enough. We're a nice little home counties team. Geez, we can play. But we lose, if you look at the data, we lose the local derbies. So we can play and we can, Southwest teams can come to our 4G pitch and we'll, Bournemouth's and Barnsville's top sides, we'll put 50 on them. And then Bracknell will come, and Newbury will come to our place, who were bottom of the league or third bottom, and they got relegated, and they'll turn us over. And it's like, well, it goes back to North-South game. Roll your sleeves up occasionally against Maidenhead, and you can do us in. We'll change, and that doesn't change overnight, and we're getting tougher physically and mentally. The reality is, we're in the right league, especially on the back of COVID. A lot of people have, a lot of players have relocated, gone to different occasions. Some have had a look and thought, probably I'm going to retire now. So we're in the right league, but actually we've sort of had, it's, I know it sounds really strange, we're still at level five, but we feel like there's a bit of a mini promotion, as in it'll be a harder challenge next year because they've moved us into the London League.
And that's interesting.
Historically, the London League at London level five is harder than the South West. And the reason we know that is the top one goes up, and in the playoffs, the second place in London always beats the second place in our league. I mean, so it just gives you an idea. And when they did the indexing, it was clear that the London League, in terms of performance, is slightly better than South West. So even though we are still at the same level, we feel there's a bigger challenge next year by playing in the London League. And it's actually a nice stepping stone. If we feel we're good enough to go up to level four, we've got to compete now against strong London sides.
Yeah, so London Welsh, because obviously you know what happened to London Welsh. We're now on our 5-year plan, so halfway through. So next season we'll be playing London South One, which is level six. So if we're successful next season, that's a big if, because it is a challenge to get out of there. It's amateur rugby, but we've got good infrastructure in place and good coaching. Lots of new players come in, and hopefully then we can be, you know, level five. And which would mean then, exactly.
Old man who's about, old dad now, dad's 80, and he never won at Cardiff Arms Park. But if we have a trip to Old Deer Park, I'll pick him up from Rose and drive him down myself, and we'll have a pint in the clubhouse there. That would be an absolute joy.
Well, if you're not promoted, and we are, that we'll look forward to that. But look, you know, it's been quite a challenging time for clubs. You know, a lot of senior players haven't played contact rugby for 18 months. What challenges has this laid on to clubs like Maidenhead?
Yeah, I think it's just about player care again. You know, so it seems really strange. On Tuesday night, we just did 5 minutes one-on-one tackle tech, because people underestimate the time out of the game, the battle-hardened nature that bodies get by getting used to the routine, games, and you become used to, and you learn how to ride tackles and land and bounce and spring. And that needs, the muscle memory needs firing up, restarting. So the key I would say to all people is, just because we can, the first day games can happen, don't all dive in and sort four games out and everyone's like straight in, here we go, full clatter. Yes, come on, we can win the league. No, you've got to slow down to speed up. I know that's counterintuitive on the back of not having played games, but I would really look after players and players who roll up on a Thursday night, 2 days before the first game, and say, I can play Saturday. You shouldn't be letting them near the field. There really has to be, I think, a sort of 2 to 3 week, 5 to 6 sessions of minute of just hitting some pads, feeling some bodies, hitting the ground, getting up before a referee is checking your studs and you're running out and having to defend your try line against a 16 stoner who's running 110.5. Because even in the bottom leagues, there are some big lumps. So I think real awareness of looking after really enthusiastic young men and women who just want to play but need protecting from themselves.
No, I agree with that. Look, you're an ex-professional, it is a rugby union player, and you've came back to playing the community game. Look, we had Tom May at our place coaching our backs for a season, and he played a few games, you know, at London, for the London Welsh first, probably like at level 8. And he must have been touching 40, but you could see the sense of enjoyment he had from still playing. I'm not sure his missus wants him to play because she wants to protect the face. I don't know why. But then you can see the enjoyment.
Handsome boy, Tom. Handsome boy.
The other team had loved it as well. absolutely loved him playing against them. They're trying to obviously, you know, rough him up or that sort of thing. But they all wanted selfies afterwards. Why do you think so few players, after being a professional player, don't carry on playing in the community game?
Oh, yeah, but Tom May was amazing. He really looked after himself as a player. He's short and squat and powerful and muscly and so durable. I mean, I can't remember a time when Tom May missed a game. Really looked after himself. Powerful, physical, squat, as I said, all these attributes that allowed him to be relatively compact. My issue is I'm like a crazy giraffe, right? My centre of gravity is somewhere near my epiglottis. It's a long way down at nearly 50 to get cluttered. So I would love to play. So what I do, I mean, I get my game time really by joining in at training, joining in the occasional contact session.
Yeah.
But you can get hurt. I mean, that's the thing about rugby. And I've had 6 shoulder reconstructions and on Lions tours, swallowed tongue and nearly died. I've sort of decided I don't really want a doctor saying count to 10 as they're giving me a general anaesthetic because I need another part of my body built. I've sort of the trade-off between the absolute joy of being competitive and playing in a game and the risk with family, jobs, lifestyle of going through rehab again is such that I can get my fix on a Tuesday and Thursday and enjoy it in a controlled environment. I did think on Tuesday night when I ran in for another try, I thought, do you know what? If I pick the right game on this year, when they had those in the first, second lockdown, when we came out, I represented Maidenhead in a tens tournament, but it was touch. I sort of feel that I could play for the twos at 50 and stand up fly half or fullback. And sort of, do they still have those golden shorts that mean you can't be tackled?
I think you could have them. I think you'd be all right.
Yeah, I have those.
Might make you a target, Will, though, won't it?
Well, so people think, you know, I know at training down at Maids, a couple of lads get irritated if I sneak through a little gap. And I know a few of them are looking to try and slot me. So I've got to stay aware. You can't kid a kidder.
Yeah, look, I wasn't talking particularly about yourself. It's more about general pros, but I suppose you've answered that in a way because, you know, when you're being paid to play and you get injuries, that's sort of, you can take that. But when it's amateur, then you've got your other careers and family to consider, then it becomes a challenge. So we did have Sonny Parker turning out for our Ockies, our occasionals, which was quite nice for those players to, you know, it's nice for the players to play with people like yourself and Sonny Parker's and Tom May, isn't it? So that could help grow the game. But
no question. If I'd gone through my career without 6 shoulder reconstructions, I'd be playing for Maidenhead now.
Yeah.
But I've clearly got some sort of inability to keep my shoulders attached to my body in and around the game of rugby, and don't want to lose them again.
No, that's absolutely fair enough. Look, last time I saw you at London Welsh, you were working with Canterbury and you were inspiring our youth on a midweek training session. I think it's been filmed for YouTube or for a Canterbury social media or something. Do you get out to see and coach at many clubs? And because you're quite an inspiring individual, so you must, you know, love inspiring the next generation of players.
Oh, I love being out on the field with kids or grown-ups who want to be better. The only thing I ask for when I turn up is a smile and a bag full of enthusiasm. I'll bring the rest. That's all you need. Just rock up with some effort, with some elbow grease. If you rock up with elbow grease, I can help make you better. I love being out on the field. I don't have to be trying to find the next Emily Scarrett or the next Maro Itoje. It's not about that. It's about supporting and helping kids who have a passion and just giving them a few rugby life hacks, a few shortcuts that might make the game a little bit easier for them.
No. I think my lads were at that session. They loved it. It was brilliant. So thanks for doing that.
Look, I give everyone nicknames very quickly. everyone has a nickname. Everyone has a super strength. And once I identify the strength. It's like, right, let's make sure we're allowing that child, that adult, to get the best out of themselves by understanding that they might not be the fastest, but Paul, Sophie, Frank, Steve, we need your biceps to win us a couple of collisions, and that's what you're going to give to the team. So now a lot of fun. I look forward to getting up and down the country as and when we're allowed to travel a little bit more and games are allowed to happen.
Oh, yeah, fingers crossed. Look, the championship has started and the sky's to show that. Are you excited about the competition? Because obviously with Saracens playing it this year, it's going to have more publicity. But it's a bit of a shame there's no broadcast rights. And why is there no broadcast rights? Is it just no money in the game for it, or less interest?
Look, I think it's all, everything's KPIs now, and understanding that what's driving revenue, bottom line. And we like to think in the Corinthian world that wouldn't it be great to watch Saracens Ealing Trailfinders or Ealing Trailfinders versus Ampthill and the mighty Bedford, watching kids' first introduction to the slope at Bedford and understanding, what's this pitch? We're playing on the side of a mountain. How are we playing on the side of a mountain in Bedford? And the people who haven't played there won't know what I'm talking about. But until you play at Bedford, you're like, what on earth's going on here? So, yeah, that would be great. But the reality is money, production costs, and have to be taken in the context of the commercial value that it's enhancing to a channel. And so, unfortunately, that means occasionally stuff that we may have been used to seeing on the telly has dropped off. So, that's the case in this instance.
Yeah, it's just a shame, I suppose, because obviously there's no fans as well at the moment. So, and it's a bit of a higher profile league because of Saracen being in it. But look, you know, as I say, you mentioned why that isn't the case. But look, do you think it would be a shootout between Saracens and Ealing? And once they've all played their 10 games, they'll come down, they'll be the top two, and it'll be between those two.
You would think so. You would think if you firepower, squad depth, calibre of player. The one caveat to that is over, if it was a 22-game season, you'd 100% it would be those two. But in a 10-game season, you only need to have a little 5-6-week run, and suddenly one of those two is looking over their shoulder, and you have a horrible trip to Jersey.
There's never a horrible trip to Jersey. It's always good.
Horrible trip to Jersey, but it's
good. Yeah.
You have a great trip to Jersey, but leave. and before you know it, you're right in the schmuck. And then that would be interesting to see what happens.
Well, Saracens have lost once. I don't think they can afford to lose again because Doncaster have won all their games. So I think so. And so have Ealing. So
people underestimate that league. And people underestimate the lower league. I genuinely go around even at level five and I see some 28-year-old, 29-year-old players. And I'm thinking, how has he slipped through the net? How's he playing at this level? Who's advised him? Or, you know, there might be circumstances outside of his control, but I'm telling you, there's so many talented players in the lower levels. And that's, I mean, case in point are Exeter, aren't they, really? The ability from that southwest area to have found little gems that they've put together and collectively been bloody impossible to beat.
Very, very impressive. So obviously, from London Welsh being the championship, I loved it because we had in Richmond, as you well know, you've got Richmond, Scottish, Ealing, London Welsh. Just so many games to go and watch. And probably not great for the RFU in growing the game, having that concentration of clubs in one area. But if you're in that area, it's fantastic. Look, in your rugby career, how did you come across London Welsh?
The year we were in the championship, I think I played against them. Did I miss both games? No, because I played all... Oh, man. I think I played away, but didn't play at home. I remember, I think Adam Bidwell was at Welsh.
Yeah.
It was Bidders at Welsh.
Yeah.
And I remember watching Bidders at our place. And I'm going, wow, who's he? And he's actually a great mate of mine, Bidders. I didn't know him that well at the time. Was Owen Walby off there?
I can't remember, but what I do know from that season, right, I think you started one of the games on the bench because it was your last year playing rugby. And this is when, obviously, the Quins, some of the young lads who were there, like Mike Brown, started playing, Rob Shaw, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But both the games were at the Stoop because London Welsh London Welsh for financial reasons.
Yeah, thank you for reminding me that. I'm thinking, I've been to Aldea Park loads of times, but I don't think I've played there. But I know I played against London Welsh. Yeah. So I've obviously played against them at the Stoop.
It was. And you write for the Telegraph. I actually wrote a letter to the Telegraph, right, as a London Welsh supporter, saying it shouldn't be allowed for a league game to move from Old Deer Park to the Stoop just for financial reasons. Because, that you know, they do it in the cup.
Stop you, would you? Let it go.
You'd have played them Old Deer Park. You'd have played them Old Deer Park then.
Cardiff again. Really, honestly. Behave.
Anyway, you played against us in 05, in your last season. Quick Six Nations chat. You played against Wales loads. Was the best game you played against them in 03, Rugby World Cup quarter-final, do you think?
No, Wales should have won.
Yeah.
Wales, we were tired. We'd overtrained. And Shane was unbelievable. Joan Stephen at 10 was just beautiful. Chavis was in at every breakdown. You killed us. I mean, really missed. There was a moment, I think, in the second half where you got a pen and Peeler tapped and went. I just thought at the time, we should have taken three there. Taking three, I think that would have taken you further ahead. Really put the squeeze on us. But we tapped, went, we turned it over. Wilco's banged over a couple of drop goals and some skinny bloke on the end crept in. Yeah, can't remember his name.
Not me. Funny haircut, didn't he?
Yeah, that's it. Actually, the best game we played against you lot was at the Millennium in 01. When we put 40 on you. Jeez. I'm sorry to my Welsh friends who are listening. We were bloody untouchable. That spring, we got the Irish game was cancelled because of foot and mouth. But that spring, that four-game patch, France, Wales, Scotland and Italy, I think we scored 200 points and conceded about 10.
That was the basis to go on to win the World Cup. And you're a World Cup winner. Look, Will, it's been great talking to you today. Look, enjoy your time in Maidenhead. It's been fantastic talking to you. Enjoy the Lions. I hope are you going to South Africa this season or will you be doing it from the studio in Isleworth?
Yeah, no. Due to be going to South Africa. More details to follow as and when. So that's plan A.
Good stuff. But look, you know where Old Deer Park is. So if Maidenhead and London Welsh are in the same league, hopefully you can bring your dad from Frawes-on-Sea and come and visit us. All right?
Lovely to chat to a gog. And I'll see you soon.
Cheers, Will. Thank you very much.
Cheers, Gareth.